Good morning. Thank you all for coming this morning. So what I'd like to do today is to tell the story about how Cumberland County, Maine was able to virtually eliminate all sugary beverage scoreboard ads, or soda ads, I'll call them, in the public schools. It's a long story, one that started more than 10 years ago, but through this mix of policy, research, and partnerships was completed in 2015, and this is just like moving on its own. Okay, we'll move on to, okay. So I don't want to take the time to, I'm not going to take time today to talk about the importance of advertising of food and beverage on children and youth in terms of the obesity epidemic, but I think this quote from Change Lab Solutions really nicely summarizes why this is such an important issue. So unhealthy marketing is pervasive and often targets young children, leading them to nag their caregivers until they buy unhealthy foods. Over time, these kids can develop a preference for foods that are bad for them, a preference that can last a lifetime. So this is the framework that I want to be discussing today. So in order to achieve the goal of scoreboards that are free of soda ads, it required these three components: policy, research, and partnerships. We had a state law, the first in the nation, prohibiting some junk food marketing, including soda scoreboards, that passed in 2007. And it did lead to the removal of a number of soda scoreboards. The research that followed examined how the law was implemented, and that may have led to some scoreboards changing, although once the research ended, we didn't follow up with that. But then the partnerships that used the policy and used the research led to the elimination of the remaining soda ads in our county. So I want to acknowledge the important role that my co-authors have in this project. So Becky Smith, who now works at the American Heart Association, was a lead advocate around our policy in 2007. Michelle Polacek, who's in the audience here today, was the principal investigator for the research project that we did in 2010 and 2011. And Bethany Sanborn is my co-chair of our obesity work group that's part of the Cumberland District Public Health Council. So I'm going to start at the end. So this is what our county looks like now. So this is the after view, and this is what taken over the last few months, these photos. And this is what we started with. As you can see, lots of advertising that is not really very pleasant. So I'm going to start with partnerships. So just to give you a little context, this project was done under the umbrella of the Cumberland District Public Health Council. In Maine, we don't have county health departments, but we do have these public health districts. And they're made up of a volunteer group of stakeholders whose mission is to promote health through information coordination and advocacy. So Cumberland County is Maine's, and that's in red, is Maine's largest county with 285,000 people, and the home to Maine's largest city, which is Portland, Maine, with just over 66,000 people. In 2013, the Cumberland District Public Health Council identified obesity as one of its priority areas and established a work group with this charge, which was to identify opportunities that exist within the county to impact obesity and then take action on one or more of those opportunities. So this is a process. We had a work group that got together, and there are a lot of groups in the county that were working on obesity. So we did take a look at what everybody was doing, scan the environment, and identify what the gaps were. We looked at the best practices, including CDC's list of best practices for obesity prevention. We looked at available research, including the research that's done in Maine that I was referencing earlier. And we needed to select, or we wanted to select a project that would last, would take just 1 or 2 years to complete. And this is the important part, it would not require any funding because we had no funding to do this work. Really just use the time of our work group members to make it happen. So this is the research that the group looked at. So there is a in 2010 study on food and beverage marketing in schools with Michelle Polacek as a principal investigator. This was a Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Healthy Eating Research Round 4 project. And there's a number of findings, but the one finding that sort of stuck out to our group was that 63% of schools had scoreboards that were not compliant with Maine's school marketing law. That is, that they had sugar-sweetened beverages on their scoreboards. So that seemed to our group to be a doable challenge, and so we set a goal to make all Cumberland County schools scoreboards Frazier Sweet Beverage ads. So the process was that we compiled the list of all the schools. There were 12 districts in this in our county and 67 schools. We did exclude Portland because at that time Michelle Polachek was working with the Portland School District on a marketing project, so we excluded Portland, and we excluded the two elementary island schools because we didn't have the funding to go out there. And one of the things that we knew, because we didn't have any funding, is that we needed another partner. We needed a partner who would agree to cover the cost of replacing those scoreboards. So we contacted the Maine Beverage Association, which is a lobbyist for the soda industry, and they agreed to partner with us on this project. So the work group members visited every single school to check the scoreboards. So we looked at all the fields and all the gyms. And for high schools, there's somewhere between four, it depends on the size of the school, four and six. Fields plus a gym, and a couple of them had pools, and middle schools usually had about three or four gyms. And by the way, all the photos that you see in my presentation were all from schools, and all after we passed a law saying there's no junk food marketing in schools. So these are our findings. So 8 of the 12 school districts, 67%, had at least one sugary drink branded scoreboard. So we found those on football fields, track fields, baseball, softball fields, multi-purpose fields, soccer fields, and gym scoreboard. The ads were Mountain Dew, Coke, and Pepsi, but Coke by far was the biggest offender. So when you're dealing with schools, athletic venues, the athletic director is the person who you need to go to, not the principal, not the superintendent. So we sent a letter to each of the athletic directors explaining the purpose of the project. We told them who the Cumberland District Public Health Council was and what we were trying to accomplish. We referenced the law. We provided them a copy of the law. And we also gave them a fact sheet that ChangeLab Solutions had done for us called Understanding the Law. We explained the role of the Beverage Association and told them that they would be contacted by the Beverage Association and that they would be able to switch out their scoreboard from a soda ad to a water ad and that there would be no charge to them. And then we did send a copy to the superintendent. So you don't have to read this, but just to let you know, this is what we provided to the Beverage Association. So we gave them all the stuff in yellow. So the Beverage Association figured out the stuff in white, which was the size. But we told them who the school, what the school district was, with the name of the athletic director, the phone number for the athletic director, what the current logo was so that they could decide to get the Dasani or the Aquafina replacement, and then the location of it. And so what they do is they, the Beverage Association, they purchase these vinyl magnetic overlays that go over the existing logo. So the Beverage Association did contact every single school to find out the size, because the school sometimes didn't know, and sometimes he even actually went out and actually measured the size. Then he ordered the signs and had them delivered to each of the schools, and the schools had the facilities folks replace the signs. And so the committee went back to recheck, and of course we did find some schools, this was several months later, that still had not replaced their scoreboard, so we did send them a letter and remind them of what they were going to do, and they were all very apologetic and did it. So now most of the schools have made the transition, so four signs were taken down and not replaced with any advertisement, which is actually ideal, and seven scoreboards have the water sign, and we found out on Friday that one of the scoreboards is the wrong size, and so we're back to reordering that one. So some final thoughts on partnerships. So we need partners to cover the county. That 67 schools was a lot of school. And when you have no funding, you really need people who are willing to go out and to do that. And the relationship with the soda industry had to be clear from the very beginning, and it was, that we were agreed that we would be partners for this project, but we knew that in the future that we probably would be adversaries. And in fact, we did have a very adversarial legislative session this year. But we needed someone to pay for those scoreboards, so they were critical to cover the cost of that replacement. The other important thing was that we had the Public Health Council, that was the umbrella of the Public Health Council that really did add credibility to the project. It wasn't just one single organization going after the schools. And the schools really are great partners, and they're really willing to do this. We really do need to make it easy for them to participate. Let's see, so let me talk about the research now. So as I said, this was a 2010 study at the University of New England with Michelle Polachek, Robert Wood Johnson, and one of the study aims was to assess compliance with Chapter 156, Maine's statewide policy banning brand-specific junk food and beverage marketing in schools. And this is the citation for the research results. So it was a cross-sectional observational study. We had 20 randomly selected Maine high schools, and a couple of those were in the county that we were working on, and schools were paid $300 to participate. Two of the research assistants completed a very comprehensive food and beverage marketing survey of all food and beverage marketing, not just those that maybe didn't comply with the state law, and they went everywhere in the school. And then one of the research assistants, and that did all the fields too and gyms, and one of the research assistants completed an interview with the principal and food service director about their experience in the law. So once again, there's a lot of findings, but here's some of them that every school had food, I'm sure you're not surprised to hear this, every school had food and beverage marketing. The mean was 49 posters or signs with a range of 4 to 309 with food and beverage marketing. And as I mentioned before, the important finding for our group was that 63% of the schools had scoreboards that were not compliant with Maine's marketing law. And this is what they found in the research. So you can see the items in red are the ones that are not compliant with state law, Coke and Pepsi being the biggest offenders. Quite a few did have Aquafina though, and then there are some others. And then this was an additional finding that we felt was important too, is that school administrators feel banning food and beverage marketing in schools is important, but they needed more information, technical assistance, resources to help implement it. So that was important also for us to know. So how did this research inform the partnership? So even though we have a state law, we realized that it was very likely that many or most of the schools had non-compliant scoreboards. We did realize the importance for school administrators that we weren't expecting a lot of pushback because they did think it was important and wanted to make it happen. And without this research, that we would have assumed that all the schools were complying with state law. We had that state law in the books for many years, and I can assure you we probably would not have even considered doing this project if we didn't have that research. So let me tell you a little bit about our policy. So this goes back to 2003, actually, when, okay, so this is the law, I'll read the law. So this is the law, it says that was passed in 2007, an act to protect children's health on school grounds, and there's two parts to this bill. One had to do with tobacco, and the other had to do with advertising. And it said that brand-specific advertising of food or beverages is prohibited in school buildings or on school grounds, except for food and beverages, meeting standards for sale or distribution on school grounds. So basically, if you couldn't sell it, you couldn't advertise it. So the history of that goes way back to 2003 when we had a bill that passed called the Resolve to Study Obesity, and it established a commission to study public health that looked at obesity. And that group came out with 27 recommendations, including one that was to ban advertising of junk food in schools. In 2005, when we actually had some money, we did a public opinion poll that demonstrated a lot of support, 60% support for advertising ban in schools. In 2006, we actually did focus groups in four different regions of the state, and even in the most conservative areas of our state, where they were not interested in any of the policies that we were interested in finding out what they liked about them, they did support a ban of advertising of junk food in schools. So I think that's probably why in 2007 we really had very little trouble passing this bill. So the role of policy in the project. So obviously policy was the focus of the research, and it was really important that for the first time we could actually quantify the amount of food and beverage advertising in schools, because there's no enforcement mechanism. It all had to happen really voluntarily. So that was important for us to know. Most schools thought they were compliant with the law, and they were not. And some of them didn't even realize that some of their scoreboards were not compliant with the law. But actually informing schools that they're out of the compliance with the law was the key strategy. This, having the policy, really was the linchpin. It was the most important piece of this whole entire effort. Lessons learned. So the other lesson learned is that the beverage companies do provide important resources, and are willing partners in Maine, but it really, and probably in other parts of the country too, but it really doesn't change the relationship for future policy efforts. We are not always going to be on the same side, and probably most of the time are not. But without funding, it takes partners who are willing to go to every school and to really help follow up. And although it's not a priority for schools, they are willing to participate if it's made easy for them. So once again, this is what our county looks like now, and in terms of being a great opportunity to provide a healthy environment, a place that thousands of kids and their families and community members see every year, it really does create a much healthier environment than the place that we started from right there. So our next project, this keeps moving on its own. Our next project, just to let you know, is that we're going now after our recreational facilities, particularly those that work with mostly children and youth. And for instance, this one is our Bridge and Recreation Department, and they have already said that they're going to take theirs down. But it'll be interesting to see. This will be voluntarily compliance, and I'm not sure that they'll do it, but we'll find out. And then I just want to acknowledge my co-authors again. The work group that did all the on the ground work, and some of these slides are Michelle Polachek's from her research project, and that's my contact information.
Thank you.
So thank you. I'll take any questions.